from the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida. It's the Annie Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 13th, 2011, and you're listening to the best poker cast, perhaps the most nasally poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
Yeah, and I'm Scott Long. Look at that.
Good to get that in there.
You just get people to know. But you're right. Yeah, you're sniffling. I'm sniffling. Of course, I got two new cats running around the house, so I'm adjusting to the new bout allergies. And you just are perpetually sick, man. You pick up stuff everywhere. Anytime you fly, man, you're like Faso.
It's only when I fly, though. I actually have not been sick in years as far as nasally. You know what I mean? Like, because I got those flu shots the last 2 years in a row, and I've been doing really good. But whenever I fly, I want to wear a freaking Michael Jackson mask and take that airborne. You know what I mean? And I didn't do it this time, and I got home, and I mowed the lawn, and I thought, oh, this damn pollen. And no, it wasn't that. I ended up catching something. I don't know what it is, and I hate it, man. I hate traveling.
Man, I'm going to add some of those SARS masks to the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com.
You should. Put the logo on the mask. That'd be free publicity, and you're staying health conscious.
Yeah, I think Faso described the plane as the great petri dish in the sky.
Yes, very good. That's exactly it. And you know, I know the little wrinkled little lady in front of me that gave it to me, too. She was hacking the whole time. I stuck my nose in my shirt, and, you know, of course, I stretched the neck out because my nose is so big. But it was... I knew that's what was going to happen. If I didn't do that the whole ride, I was going to catch it. I didn't do it the whole ride, and sure enough, I'm all hacking. But enough about me.
But you know what? What's getting everybody else sick is trying to find a new place to play online poker.
Oh, man, that was a priceless segue, dude.
Wasn't it?
Absolutely priceless. You deserve an award for that.
Oh, thanks.
Give you a conky. Conky for best. Never mind.
First of all, I got my PokerStars check.
Oh, that's good.
This week, and I cashed it. I mean, obviously, everybody, you know, these doomsayers out there. Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, you cashed it, but wait until it clears to get excited. I'm like, all right, dudes, come on. I'm pretty sure it's going to happen, but whatever, we'll see. But right now, I'm $365.78 richer.
Yay.
And again, it was an actual PokerStars check. So, I mean, it wasn't any of these Joe's Golf Ball checks or anything like they used to use, you know.
Did you take a picture of it? Said,
You know, I should have. I thought about that later. But, yeah. Oh, well. But it's cash. But now, so people were out there trying to find a new place to play, right?
Yeah.
Because there still are U.S.-facing sites out there. And by most accounts, the ones that are still out there are doing gangbusters business right now as people just trying to find anywhere to play, even though it's surprisingly because so many people have written us or talked to me and said, you know what, hey, I'm just going to sit on the sidelines for a while. I just don't want to get involved in one of these smaller rooms right now. I'll wait and see how this whole thing shakes out.
Right.
So I've heard that from a lot of people, but apparently there's a lot of other people out there that are saying, forget it. I'm gonna start playing. And the reason I bring it up today, too, is, one, to remind folks that Poker AGA, a great site on the Emerge Network,
right,
is still a sponsor of Anti-Up. They did not pull out after Black Friday.
Right.
And formerly were known as Super City. And so that's a good place for you to at least consider playing. They were on our cruise a couple times ago.
Yeah, they were hilarious guys. Pretty good players and a lot of fun to be around.
So, you know, at least consider that. We'll be getting some new banners and codes up on our site soon for people interested in that. But we also got some emails from people that are showing a wide variety of customer service levels, Chris, in post-Black Friday for some of these news sites. You know, if you go to our forum at AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum, there's a little thread there with people talking about some of these and some singing the praises of some folks for getting right back to them with all the support questions. I think we even had a listener that actually had like like a test email he sent to him to be sure that it wasn't going to get tripped by their automatic response systems, you know?
Yeah.
It was real specific stuff, and he was excited that he got a response really quickly back from a real human. So that speaks volumes, obviously, now, because I think I'm not alone in saying that a lot of people are just bemoaning the loss of PokerStars because that was a company you knew you could just trust.
Yeah.
you know, you may not always like them, but support was quick and fair, and it seems to me that that's the big thing that people are looking now. They don't really care so much about soft games or software or anything else. They just want to know that the site that they're putting money on actually cares about their business.
Right. And while you were discussing some of this a minute ago, I checked my bank, and yep, I got my money from PokerStars as well. So
hey,
yeah. So we're both good to go, and that's exactly what other sites now are trying to emulate, is to be as consistent as PokerStars is. So worked out for both of us.
Yeah, and we did get an email from I believe it was an email this week from a listener that totally complained about one site and said the service was terrible. And so I just want to bring up on the show and talk about it a little bit. I mean, it's not important to talk about which site, and certainly we have no ties to any site, so don't know any inside information. But I think it's just realistic to expect that these sites are just getting overloaded, aren't they?
Bombarded, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to figure people are jonesing for poker, so if they're going to put a couple $100 on a site, which really isn't that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things, they're going to go there and then find out that they do or don't like the site, or that's different than what they're used to or whatever, or they want the trust issues thing like you said, so they're going to be bombarding them with emails. So you got to figure they're getting an influx of customers they never expected they would get. And the other thing too is, you know, they probably aren't going to hire a bunch of new people to work for them when they may be just trying to get as many scraps as they can until they have to shut down as well, you know what I mean? So
well, yeah, that's a good point. And even if it's the opposite, that they really do want to staff up for this, it takes a while to hire people. I mean, everybody that all of our listeners that have real jobs, you know how long it takes to when the boss posts an opening on the bulletin board to that person actually shows up and is capable at his or her job.
You know,
it takes a while. We're talking what 3-4 weeks removed here from Black Friday. So I guess the reason I wanted to bring it up on the show is just to kind of urge our listeners to be a little patient. In this transition, it doesn't mean tolerate bad service at all, but just be cognizant that if the service level that you're getting or the speed right now is not up to your liking, it may not be a reflection on the site per se. It just could be a reflection on the timing of it all.
Yeah.
So if you're able to calm down a little bit and give some time, or just wait it out for a couple more months, I imagine you get a different experience, I would think. I'm just guessing. But.
No, absolutely. And I got a couple emails this week from listeners and from readers who, you know, should I put money on these other sites? And, you know, will it get seized? And I'm worried about that. And I emailed them back saying, you know what, of course you're worried because, you know, anything could happen. But there's two sides to this. One, you know, you should have been worried about it when it was the regular sites.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you didn't know what the government was going to do, especially with the UIGEA out there. We all knew there was a risk of the government just doing its big brother thing and screwing everybody. But, you know, and now that risk is still out there. It's the same risk as it was before. And the other side is that I really, and this is just me, obviously. This is not, I didn't talk to anybody, I don't have anybody, but I'm just thinking, they are going to be so busy with this case that they're not just going to shut down Bodog or whatever in the next, you know, 10 days. You know what I mean? They're not going to have enough manpower and time. They want to focus on these three to get whatever outcome they're hoping to get with this one right now. You know what I mean? I can't imagine them launching another case against three more big rooms or, you know, at least not at this moment. So,
well, yeah, I agree in part with you. I mean, we don't know what else they have already in the works,
that's true, but
at the end of the day, there is. I think I saw an estimate the other day of I forget how many they said U.S. sites are still in existence, and new ones are being created every day. Obviously, so you know, even if they have a case brewing against, you know, a Bodog or a Cake or something like that right now, they're not going to have a case against everyone.
Right,
it's just impossible. So you're right. I mean, there's always going to be somewhere to play, I would think.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know, in the meantime, you could also play still on PokerStars. It's not the same, I know, not playing for money, but you can play for fun. And one of the things that people really enjoyed about Apes wasn't so much the banana or the money you can win. It was playing with people that they've met through the show, right?
Yeah, community.
And so I was very excited to see that some of our fans have started Papes.
Papes.
PAIPS. Which stands for, imagine, play money apes.
Yeah.
Still on Poker Stars, you know, because we still have the Antioch Nation Home Games Club that some fans started. So for members of that, they've started playing some just for fun tournaments, and they're actually going to pick up the Apes schedule that was previously planned and play on that schedule, the same games and same dates and times and everything. And so, you know, it's not the same, and it's not officially from Antioch. So you're not going to win bananas or Blue Shark Optics or anything like that. But if you're looking to still play with the Nation, I highly recommend that you join the Antioch Nation Home Games Club. You can get all those details on the forum at antiochmagazine.com/forum. And play a little with our fans, right?
I was just thinking, though, you could literally, like, okay, everybody vow to send $5 to the winner. You know, mail them a check for $5. You know, everybody gets exchanges home addresses. And, all right, well, we can't actually get together, but if we take an oath to promise us to pay each other, you know, or put it in a kitty somewhere. I mean, there's still ways around it, I guess. So.
That's very true, I guess.
Right. And even then, now you're avoiding the rake, too. So.
Oh, man.
It's pretty funny.
But Ace-Ace-S-88-S-VA.
Or Aces and Eights Virginia.
Okay, that's probably better. Claimed the dubious honor of the first Papes champion. I was very excited, probably less excited when we told him that nothing was coming his way other than adulation on the show. But congrats to him. Congrats to all those folks that make the Antioch Nation Home Games Club go. And, you know, it's something, that, a little stopgap measure until we can bring it back in the form that we want to bring it back in.
Hey, Scott, any chance that you can make a few months go by quicker? Because I am really getting tired of the wife. I need to go on a cruise. I need a cruise. Every time I see a commercial on TV for a cruise, she's like, when's our next cruise? I want to go on a cruise. It's waiting too long. So any chance that it could be August 29th, like tomorrow?
I would be happy to schedule another Antioch cruise before then, if you'd like. But I know how much you like going through all the red tape that we have to go to make these cruises happen.
Well, I just want to get to this one faster, that's all. Oh, man, she's driving me crazy.
Well, you know, hey, I can't help you with that, buddy, but I can make the wait a little more interminable. Because we got even more exciting stuff coming up on the August 29th cruise now.
Cool.
It's like Christmas in, what month is it now, August. May?
Oh, now it's like Christmas in May. I thought you meant for the actual event, yeah.
Well, all right, we'll celebrate, let's say it's Christmas Eve now.
Okay.
And then Christmas will be August. a couple big announcements for the August 29th cruise. First of all, our good friend Lee Childs.
Yes.
Is joining us as our onboard pro, not only for the August 29th cruise, but also for the December 10th cruise.
Finally.
Yeah, he's been wanting to sail with us for quite a while, but as people can imagine, he's been extremely busy traveling, playing, you know, teaching through his Acumen Poker site, and of course, you know, now that he can't play online,
yeah.
He's got a little extra time. no, that wasn't the reason that he decided to do the cruise. Now he just finally said, you know, hey, I need to get on board with you guys. So he called us up last week and. So we're real excited he's going to be sailing with us. He will be teaching a two-hour advanced strategy course on the first morning of both cruises. And folks that listen to the show obviously know how brilliant he is, and I don't think I'm overstating it, when he breaks down our hands of the week.
Right.
Not just in what he's talking about, but how he talks about it. I think that's important,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I tell people when they're looking for people to learn from that, yeah, you can go to see a named pro, but... You know, it's one thing to be able to play poker. It's another thing to be able to teach poker.
Right.
And Lee is one of those rare folks that can do both. So we're going to be real excited to have him on board. And he's also going to be offering some one-on-one and group instruction at an additional cost for folks. But his two-hour course is free with your cruise fare. Again, that's only $369 per person based on double occupancy for the August 29th cruise. And the December cruise price break was announced recently, so it's down to $619 a person.
Awesome.
Based on double occupancy. So join us on one or both of those and hang out with Lee. I know he's going to love meeting the folks from the Antioch Poker Cast on there.
And
then, of course, we got a great sponsor now, Chris.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about this Crystal Palace, right?
Crystal Palace. There are two casinos in Nassau. Crystal Palace... is one of the great ones there, and they decided to be a partner with us on this cruise, and they are going to give all of our passengers a casino package for free.
Free.
All you have to do is sign up for their Passport Rewards card when you get there on stopping during the cruise.
Right.
And they're going to give you $10 in free play. They're going to give you a free drink, and they're going to get you 10% off a lunch. And if you're bringing the wife or the husband, the boyfriend, the girlfriend, the dad, the kid, somebody that doesn't want to gamble in the casino there, but they enjoy splashing and pools and beaches, they're offering a day pass for our passengers, too, for just $40. And you get a free buffet with the day pass as well, too. And we got a limited number of little round-trip transportation tickets, too, we're going to be giving out. So you may not even have to spend a dime to get over there.
Very cool.
For your $10 of free money and your free drink. I'm going to use that free drink to get maybe like a Johnny Blue, I think.
Johnny Blue.
I'm sure they won't let me, but I'm going to try to maximize my value.
Very exciting stuff. Always glad when we can value add to the package that we're offering. And it's just one more thing, one more experience that you get to enjoy while you're on the cruise. I'm real happy about it.
Absolutely. Remember, check out our webpage at antiupmagazine.com/cruise for all those details. And when you're ready to book, as many people have been, give me a call at 727-331-4335.
All right, a mailbag this week comes from Rob Moby Donk. He's from Canada. He says, not sure if this made the international news wire, but there was a botched robbery that ended in a murder at an underground game here in Toronto. As one witness in the story comments, maybe legit games would be able to hire proper security. Even at some of our bigger home game tournaments, we're worried about too much word of mouth causing this type of problem. He wants to know our thoughts. He said, poker is not illegal up there. You know, they have casinos and you can play online, and they even have licensed charity games. But private games for money are as illegal as anywhere else. What do you think about this?
Yeah, you know, I didn't see the story until Moby Donk sent it to us, but he makes a great point. This is kind of one of the things that a lot of us advocating for regulated poker mentioned, is that, like it or not, people are going to play poker regardless.
Yeah.
And or do lots of other things regardless, whether it's implicitly legal or not. So the best thing you can do is to make it... to regulate it and keep an eye on people and make it safer for them. Now, I'm going to stop short of advocating that they make all home games completely legal, because there's lots of other things to consider in that. But he's right. You know, when you go to a game that's not regulated, for whatever reason, you need to accept the risk inherent in that.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly don't think that we're going to have guns blazing in any home game anymore, since you and Fastware are calmer now. but, you know, it's a risk, right? You know, there's no regulation. It doesn't mean that someone couldn't come in and cheat the game, or somebody could come in and be violent. You just don't know. And if that happens, guess what? You don't really have any recourse.
No, nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, unless you want to be one of those people on the internet that calls 911 to report someone stole your marijuana.
I often look around the table in the home game and wonder who's the one that's going to crack. I have to say that. I often wonder, would he be packing heat? Could that guy really freak out on us? And what's the repercussions of that? I'm serious, too. I've actually done that a few times.
Oh, I have no illusions that you're making that up at all. So I don't know what the best response is here. You know, again, I said I'm not a big fan on completely making home games legal, particularly in areas where gambling is already legal in other forms. Because,
right.
You know, if you make home games legal, it doesn't help the regulation part of it.
Right.
You know, it just makes it so you don't get pinched by the 5-0. But I think that the takeout from this is to just be very careful when you're playing in games that aren't regulated in any format.
So true.
All right, Moby Donk, we appreciate you sending that great question to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we will reward you with a deck of the J Design playing cards, official playing cards of Anti Up, now available in the Anti Up store at antiupstore.com. And the founder of those great cards, Jason, who's been on our cruises before, he emailed me this morning to say, hey, he's getting a posse together for the December cruise.
Awesome.
And so if you want to meet Jason, you're going to want to come on that December cruise and spend all week with him, and he'll be happy to give you some of his great cards.
He's a great guy, and a very good player, too. He's actually made money in our tournaments and, you know, made the final tables and things like that, so he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I've played with him quite a bit in some tournaments. It's always fun, because I think there's a little... Yeah, it's not a rivalry thing, but you always kind of want to outdo the people that you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Strangers, right?
Yeah, and he always gives me too much respect, which I love about him. All right, our hotline, 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it, we give you something cool. This comes from Mike from Chicago, but he's not Chicago Mike.
Hmm. Wonder how that happened.
Hey, Scott and Chris, this is Mike from Chicago, not Chicago Mike, calling in with a poker room report. A place a little out of the way, you may not get there anytime soon. It's the casino at the Greenbrier Resort in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. I was there a couple weekends ago, and the casino is brand new and small but elegant, very, very well done. The Greenbrier is under new management, which has changed a lot. I liked the place when I went a few years ago. I really love it now. Here's a few things about the poker room, though. The casino is for guests only. You have to show a guest key to get in, and then you also have to sign up in order to buy and cash in chips. So it is only for guests. Don't go there just for gambling. However, if you do go there for all the things that the Greenbrier is famous for, the hospitality, the food, the golf, so forth, then the casino is just fine. But here's the rub about the poker. They don't have poker dealers every night. They only had them on one of the three nights I went into the casino, and I asked about that. They said, well, we don't have anyone signed up for it, but they didn't explain how to sign up for it. What they need is a system to let people sign up, preferably from their rooms, and get some games going, because once they had a game going, it was full the whole time, for like 4 hours, and it just fine. The dealers were good. The atmosphere was good. The crowd was good. The players were decent and well-behaved. And so they could be probably running their poker tables all the time, because there were plenty of people in there playing other games. I'm sure a lot of them would have loved to have played some poker. The Greenbrier's got a lot to offer there. They probably need to do more to open up the poker a bit more. So if you're going there for the things that the Greenbrier is famous for, you ought to be able to get in some good poker while you're there.
I often wondered how that table was cranking at Greenbrier, you know?
Yeah.
Because we've listed them in the magazine before, but it's almost, you know, I think we've actually taken them out now, because it's just, you can't just show up and play, so it's kind of hard for us to list it, make it a legitimate listing, but we know that they could probably get a game going if they really wanted to all the time.
Yeah, it's a very unique situation, as Mike mentioned. You know, it's not a casino open to the general public. You have to be a hotel guest, or they get some other, you know, conventioneers, or yeah, they got a list of rules and stuff. So, you know, much like a lot of places, when you limit the available player base, it's harder to get a game of poker going. You can always get a game of blackjack going.
Yeah,
it only takes one person. So. So, you know, I'm hoping that he mentioned some of this stuff to the manager there, and because I know Todd there has always been, seems like, been very receptive to ideas when we've talked to him.
Oh, yeah. You know, the other thing, too, is it's great when all things are new and dandy, but when they start to, maybe when things start to wear off and they could use some more money, maybe they will consider the public option. You know what I mean? I mean, it's... You know,
I don't think it's
desperation for money. It changes a lot of rules, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and that would have to come from the lawmakers there, because
right,
it's a legal thing. But yeah, there's things you can do to make it a little easier. But you know, I get it. It's just getting poker games going is a frustrating process, and it's not always the operator's fault that things don't get going. They certainly could do better things to get it going, but. You know, it's one of the crosses that we bear as poker players.
Yeah.
Is knowing unless we bring the game with us, that there may not be a game there for us to play. All right, Mike, I believe you've already won swag before, but everybody else can call the hotline at 813-448-1120, and we'll be happy to send you a quality item like a T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com.
You know, our home game this week, or actually it was last week, but an instance came up, and it's funny because we had just gotten this call to floor emailed to us, and we're putting it in this issue of the magazine. And I had never had that happen. I think I've had it happen when they were maybe like in a home game or something, like, you know, my mom and dad or something. But it never actually happened to me in the casino or in the card room. And it happened in our home game, literally the same week we got this. So I thought it was real interesting.
Yeah, and we seemed like the real smart asses too, didn't we?
Yeah, we
acted like we knew this.
We knew it for years, you know.
Come on, everybody knows the answer to it.
But Gambit seemed a little skeptical, and so we wanted to make sure we put it on the show this week so that he would hear it and know that this is what the ruling was. I'll read it. Steve Slick Sly Spy Commie from Las Vegas, and that's C-A-L-M-Y, by the way. He said he was playing at a tournament at one of the casinos that caters to locals. It's in the middle stages of the tournament when a short stack goes all in, gets one caller, and the cards are turned up. The dealer burns a card, deals a flop, burns a card, deals a turn. Now the interesting part. The dealer burns a card, and the card that would be the river is face up on the deck. That card lets the short stack win, but the rule was that since it was face up, it's like that card never existed. It goes in the muck, and the next card is played, which will let the larger stack win now. The whole purpose of burning cards is to protect the next card being played, so that it doesn't matter if it's marked or whatever, and no one can see it until the burn card has been burned. Even though it helped everyone at the table by knocking out a player, everyone thought it was a bad rule. What do you guys think?
Well, it doesn't matter what we think.
That's right.
It matters what the casino staff and the casino rules think, right?
Yeah.
Of course, we know the answer now because we're smart about it. But this is what our professional Jody Russell, again, he's our poker room manager for our Antioch Poker Cruises and runs a couple rooms out in northern Nevada, says. He says, this ruling was dead on accurate. Anytime a card is face up in the deck, it is considered a quote-unquote boxed card and is treated as a non-existent card, simply a piece of paper in the deck. It is thrown face down in the muck, and the next card is the actual card that should be played. This is a simple ruling for experienced floor people and should always be consistently called the same way every time. Had this floor person ruled differently and allowed the card to play, it would have created a bad situation for the next floor person in that room the next time a box card appeared and it was ruled differently. Inconsistency from supervisor to supervisor, shift to shift, and room to room is the largest difficulty poker professionals face. Bravo! To the floor person who made that call.
You know, and it's so true. I think every single time I sit at a poker table in a card room, somebody inevitably will get some sort of ruling or some sort of, you know, action by the dealer that they'll say, well, last night I was here and they didn't do it that way. And a lot of times, you know, they're just being jerks or they're just trying to get it to go their way. But generally, yeah, that's got to be the toughest thing that they face because they don't know how Joe, the supervisor, did it last night or Mike the night before, you know what I mean? And if they need to know the rules and be consistent. And this is one that clearly, according to Jody, is you know, obvious and not something that even should be interpreted any different way.
You know, we talked about this on the show a long time ago, but Dennis Hone, the poker room manager up at Ebro, last time I was up there, was showing me this book that he was putting together.
Yeah.
Of all the rules, and he was making it available for all the players to pick up a copy and all the floor people to have it. And that was his reason behind it, is to get his staff on it consistently and to have the players be able to back it up and let them know, hey, no, you're making a wrong decision. Here's what it says in the book. I mean, obviously, it doesn't clarify everything. Jody will be the first to tell you that, you know, the first TDA rule is that kind of a floor staff do whatever they want if they have to, you know, for the fairness of the game. But for the most part, you know, having that printed form of consistency is great. I don't think I would have ruled this way without knowing it, so I feel smarter now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know what I would have done, but it seems like treating it as if it didn't exist is kind of weird to me.
It's interesting with what Dennis offers, too, by offering the book to every player in the room. Now that forces his floor people to know every rule properly because they're going to get called out on it if they don't, and that's going to be embarrassing for them, embarrassing for the house, and you know, it makes them more educated. So it, you know, bravo to him too. That's
yeah,
a, you know, a way to make your staff stay on their toes.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if some of the rooms, I mean, obviously printing it is an expensive process,
right.
For two guys that spend a gajillion dollars a month on printing bills. No, but it'd be interesting if people can print that stuff like on their website or somewhere. You know, everybody's got smartphones now, so as long as you can access it somehow, I think it would be a great improvement for every room.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't cost anything to put it on your website. So, all right, well, folks, remember, you can call the floor by sending us an email at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the call the floor forum thread at antiupmagazine.com/forum, and we'll get Jody to respond and settle those bar bets for you.
I'm going to let you take this next one, since it's your favorite segment and your favorite member of the Antiup Nation.
Yeah, well, our feedback is tied to the call to floor. It's a response to, I believe, last week's call to floor. And I guess it just goes to show that even after the referee rules, that the players are still complaining.
All right, let's listen.
Hey, this is Gundam Poker. You guys are killing me about this dealer call to floor where the guy asked if it was a legal raise and the dealer said it wasn't. How do you, I mean, it's impossible to know when the dealer is right and wrong. And so, you know, by inference, I mean, you'd have to ask every single time to call the floor. I mean, either you trust what the dealer says or you don't. And that's the reason for asking the dealer. You know, he wasn't sure. The dealer said it was. I just don't get it. So to have a defense of saying that the, you know, that you should call the floor or whatever Jody said, I think that's pretty bogus. And, you know, it's just an unfortunate thing. I'm not saying I disagree with the ruling. I'm just saying you can't the defense isn't that it's the players. The players should have called the floor. That's all. Bye.
All right. Well, you know, the reason I included this, beyond just the fact that I love when everyone get Gundam on the show, is that we've got a couple other emails, a couple other, I believe, some forum posts about this, just saying, you know what, hey, I just don't really buy this. I think if a dealer gives me bad information, that's his problem, not my problem. And I guess I just want to remind folks that that's really not the case. It's unfortunate when you're given bad information. But at the end of the day, it's your job as a player to understand every rule, to understand every bet. And what I took from what Jody said last week was not so much that, hey, it's a player's problem, is you have to know how to ask the question, not just ask the question.
Right.
And you know, what we saw is our listener who wrote in last week asked whether it was a legal raise and was given bad information, when Jody was suggesting is, hey, can you show me the raise? And that way you get better information. It gives the dealer another chance to not make that mistake.
Yeah.
Because it's easier just to say, oh, yeah, that's a legal raise.
Right.
Or it's not a legal raise. But would you actually make them show it, then... You know, it's the whole going back to elementary school and having to show your work on the board, you know, when you're doing the math problems.
Yeah.
You know, if you get it, it's one thing to say, here's the answer, but it's another thing when you go back and you're forced to show the work, maybe you'll realize you made a mistake. So, knowing whether there's a legal raise, this is one of those tough things that gets a little confusing, and you don't want to be the kind of guy that slows the game down. But you just got to take responsibility for it. You know, it's like driving. You take your hands off the 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock, bad things could happen. So,
I mean, think about it like this. How many times, especially like in an Omaha 8 game, how many times do the players tell the dealer what's right and what's wrong when they're deciding what hand wins or he has a live deuce or, you know? I mean, obviously when it's simple rules, people are brave to speak up and say what they got to say to make things right. So if you know the rules and you're willing to do it, then you need to know the rules when it's also when it's something that's difficult, or whether it's a raise or whatever. If people are willing to talk to the dealer and know the rules that way, then you need to know them all the time. That's one way to clarify it. I mean, if you're willing to say, no, the next card's got to be dealt up or something like that, then okay, you're helping the dealer, and the dealer didn't know or didn't do it right, then it happens. So, you know, if you're unsure of something, you need to make sure it's absolutely clear and know the rules yourself. It makes common sense to want to know the rules of a game you're playing.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. All right, well, folks, remember to send your feedback either by calling the hotline or sending us an email, and we got a bunch of it backed up, so we'll get some on some future shows.
Very good. Let's see what stories are piling up on the Antiup News Desk.
In the wake of Black Friday, two large lobbying campaigns have been launched to pass a federal online poker bill. The Poker Players Alliance has begun a mail and phone blitz of federal lawmakers and plans a Washington, D.C. fly-in, bringing many of its state directors and other members to Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, the American Gaming Association held a press conference with the CEOs of some of the largest brick-and-mortar gaming companies in the United States to say federal regulation is now needed. The group plans to submit its own bill to Congress.
I don't know. I hope it's enough.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this, I mean, we knew Poker Players Alliance was going to be all over this because that's what they exist for, and they've been doing this, you know, forever. Now they're just trying to canvass that newfound civic-mindedness that we've talked about in the show before. The American Gaming Association is what perhaps the most interesting one for me here, and these brick-and-mortar companies that are all of a sudden lining up. You know, you could be the conspiracy theorist in you. Could say this is more proof that these folks are just waiting for the Department of Justice to clear out the competition, and now, you know, they want to come in and, and pick up the pieces. I'm not going to argue with you if you believe that. At this point, I'm just happy that so many people are pushing for something.
Yeah.
Because whatever we get in the future has got to be better than what we have now.
Absolutely. All right, well, there's not much to celebrate at what's left of the headquarters of Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker. While the company finally reached a deal with the Department of Justice to start the process of returning money to U.S. players, it finally pulled out of the U.S. market, laid off most of its staff, and has disputed claims from one of its creditors that it's filing for bankruptcy. We're getting emails like every day from them. Here's a clarification on the last clarification of the last clarification. That we want to be clear on this clarification. I mean, it's constantly every day we're getting something from.
Yeah, you know, PokerStars is going to continue to be a strong company, whether it's ever allowed back in the U.S. market or not. Full Tilt, I imagine, is going to continue to be very profitable in some form. But these folks, wow.
Yeah.
You know, this whole laying off the staff and repurposing themselves overseas, they seem to be burdened with debt now, and certainly you're still fighting all the bad publicity they got. It's just it's a long shot here for these folks.
And more conspiracy, too, with if you wanted to be a conspiracy theorist or whatever you want to call it, with Annie Duke and Helmuth pulling out right before all this happened. It's kind of weird.
Getting out just in time.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
And I don't know if you noticed, too, but the Twitter responses from their sponsored pros who were all let go as well, too. They kind of ran the gamut. And Joe Sebok is always, I thought, he's a straight-up guy. And I think his was the best. He's like, you know, hey, it wasn't like we didn't expect this.
Right, I know.
You know, when you can't market in the U.S. anymore, you don't. There's much less of a need to have U.S. pros marketing for you. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I think some of the other ones seemed a little upset about it. Maybe more how it handled. But this is a company that's been under siege for a while.
I know.
Black Friday was just, you know, it's like, you know, when you finally plug that little tiny leak in the dam, and then all of a sudden it starts raining again.
Nail in the coffin.
All right, well, finally, the nudist lifestyle, which I know you enjoy, Chris.
Yeah, well, only at home when I'm doing the show.
The nudist lifestyle, which enjoyed popularity in the 60s and 70s, is now composed of mostly older folks, and it's looking to attract younger people. This comes from the Daily Mail newspaper. One of the activities that some groups are starting, reverse strip poker games, Chris. I love it.
Oh, I'm dressing you with my eyes.
Oh, man, that is some thinking going on there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, sorry, flush beats straight. Gonna have to put that wife beater back on.
Put it on slowly.
See, now you're the problem with the nudist lifestyle. Oh, you think all these people are pent up sexual frustration people? No, they just like to walk around with their stuff hanging out.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
See, they do.
Yeah.
So I've heard. You know, up in Pasco County, it's a big thing there.
Yeah, we used to occasionally would run a photo in the newspaper when we were working at the Times of the gate entrance of that place. They'd always just run the photo of the gate, you know, saying, here's the nudist colony in Pasco County.
I always remember one of the first Beavis and Butthead episodes where they were at the nudist colony and they're playing volleyball. I wonder if since I'm bringing Beavis and Butthead back, maybe they'll do the same thing, but they'll add the reverse strip poker games in now.
Oh, my God.
Certainly make it easier for you to run photos in the paper.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
Each year, the World Series of Poker offers a media teleconference to update journalists on changes and expectations for the coming year's event. This year's series runs from May 31st to July 19th, and on Wednesday, Executive Director Ty Stewart, Tournament Director Jack Effel, and Communications Director Seth Polansky chatted with the journalists, and my good friend Scott was there to listen in.
Yeah, I had nothing better to do.
Yeah,
know.
I figured. That's why I let you do it.
I'll see you at lunch. No, I always look forward to it. The conference every year, it rarely offers any blockbuster news because they usually, you know, they announce the schedule well before, of course, right. And any of the other big things they're working on, they'd like to release it right away. But and that was the case again this year. But definitely this year, Black Friday was a popular topic. Both the panelists, I mean, they started off right off with it. And then journalists are allowed to ask questions of them as well, too, and that dominated the questions, including, I think, one of my favorite parts of this every year, too, is listening to these people ask the same question that was just asked.
I know, because they don't even listen. They're just waiting to hear their name to ask the question. They don't even listen to what's being said, and they just say the exact same thing. It's like, well, we just answered that question. Move on, please.
Or they're already in the queue because you got to queue yourself up. Is when you hear somebody answer the question. One year somebody said, actually, hey, somebody already asked my question, thanks. But everybody else is like, oh, no, I still got to ask a question. So they try to rephrase it in a way, and it comes out being the same question.
Yeah, it's all ego-driven. They want to make sure they get their name in their newspaper mentioned or whatever magazine. Oh, my God. All right. You obviously brought up Black Friday. What's it going to mean for this year's series?
Well, the folks that were on the call, you know, Ty and Jack, particularly Ty, who is the executive director, were careful to remind folks that the World Series can't control things out of its control. It can only react to them, and that's exactly what it's doing. I mean, they're not Harris doesn't have a representative at the Department of Justice that can tell them when to seize domains or anything like that.
Right.
So, I mean, the best they can do is just react to things that happen. So. They want people to understand that. They kept repeating that they want to be really protective of the brand, particularly the gaming regulations, too. Remember, this is in a very heavily regulated state, Nevada, and the Gaming Control Board has had problems with online sites in the past. So the last thing they want to do is do anything that's going to hurt the brand, hurt the company at all. So they're going to continue to monitor developments as they happen here and make decisions as they come based off of being able to protect the brand and not violate any rules. And I thought it was also interesting, too, that they reminded folks that the series has been around for about 4 decades now, Chris.
Yeah.
Many of those years were long before online poker was invented. So it's never been dependent on it. I mean, some people might argue that it's grown exponentially because of it. But they had a World Series back in 1979, and they're going to have a World Series in 2011. That doesn't really matter what's going on in online poker. But all that being said, they really did, I thought, danced around exactly what Black Friday meant. I mean, they kept mentioning, you know, the big elephant in the room, but they didn't really mention it.
Yeah.
They were careful never to mention any of the sites by name that were involved. So they didn't really give a good roadmap for what this is going to mean for the event or players. They did reiterate that they've never had a relationship with any site that violated the UIGA, which is, you know, correct. When you go there, you kind of see like these false connections. You know, they have those luxury lounges where they got a big picture of Phil Ivey on it, but no Full Tilt logo anywhere.
Yeah.
And those are never bought by Full Tilt. They're bought by one of the players. It's kind of a weird thing. So they've never really had a relationship. Obviously, after the UIGA, you know, the sites couldn't buy in directly, so they had to give the players their money, and they had to buy in themselves. So they got that going for them in terms of a legal thing, obviously. One thing that they kept getting asked about, and they weren't on, is the wearing of patches this year.
Yeah.
You know, they had something posted on the website, which I read and then reread afterwards. It's still a little confusing to me, but it made it sound like they weren't going to allow patches for sites that don't operate, or that for patches that operate for U.S. players. I'm not quite sure I'm sold on that now, but they certainly were non-committal on it. They're going to try to, what they said is they're going to balance the interest of the event with free speech concerns too. So I don't get the sense that they want to tell anybody what they can and cannot wear, you know, unless it's inappropriate. You know?
Yeah. Well, the thing about that too is, I mean, people wear like just shirts that have logos. You know, I mean, it's not a patch per se; it's just a shirt. So now you got your own clothes. You know, that's so weird. That is a weird thing.
Yeah, and I'm reading between the lines. They didn't say this at all. This is just my conjecture based on it, but. But, you know, one of the things that I think is real difficult with an event of this magnitude is the sheer volume of people that come through the Rio every year.
Yeah.
And when you have rules, I mean, you need to have rules, but every time you invoke a rule, you got to remember whether you're going to be able to administer that rule fairly and consistently. And with this big group of players, it's really tough to do that, I think, with some things,
yeah.
Particularly Twitter, which we'll talk about later on in the show. And same with the patches. I mean, so I think that's, again, a conjecture on my part, one of the reasons they didn't come out and say, hey, you can't wear a PokerStars.net patch this year, or you can't wear a LockPoker.com patch this year, is that I think they'd have a real tough time really enforcing it consistently.
I mean, what about viewers who are, like, fans that are in the stands? You're telling me that if I'm a fan, I can't show up at the Rio wearing a shirt that says Full Tilt on it? I mean,
well, you can. I mean, it's private property. But, again, that's the problem of trying to enforce it. But,
right, that's what I mean.
But I think the real thing is they really just don't want – I mean, obviously, gaming regulators are on site at all the time to monitor this, so they don't want to run afoul of any problems with that. I mean, what do you do if a gaming regulator comes over and says, hey, there's this and that? You got to be able to deal with it pretty quickly. And then, as we're seeing with television, and we'll talk about television a lot during the show too, you know, a lot of our favorite shows are gone right now.
Right.
Because they are all dependent on that advertising and the patch wearing. And I think they want to be sure that they don't impair their great relationship with ESPN at all too. So it's a real tricky, interesting situation going on. And my personal advice, again, not based off anything they said, is, you know, if you're going to the series on some kind of deal with a site, that may not be the best year to do that. you may want to rethink that until they get this all sorted out. It certainly should be a lot more clearer next year, I think.
Well, you know, what about attendance this year? Because now all this money is tied up, or at least parts of it is tied up, and, you know, they did really rely on a lot of the, you know, the satellites from online people to pad these fields and stuff. Did they say that they thought it was going to be affected really significantly?
Well, I got to say, Chris, you know that I have the rosiest glasses in the world.
Yeah.
I think there's a real challenge to that title. Right? Because these folks, and I'm not making fun of them, I'm real proud that they're able to spin stuff as much as they can. They definitely wanted to remind folks that no one last year, including themselves, predicted that they were going to have a 20% increase in attendance.
Right.
Last year, I remember we're all predicting it was going to be down a little bit for whatever reason, and it was quite the opposite. It went up. I mean, a 20% increase is huge in anything.
Right.
So they wanted to remind us that you just never know how outside events. I mean, we're all running around now like Chicken Little, thinking that the world's going to collapse with this, and it may turn out that that doesn't have an effect at all, and it may even go up. We just don't know right now. But they're not predicting anything. They're just saying, hey, you know, don't think about the sword of Damocles hanging over your head. And they also mentioned that foreign attendance they expect to continue to improve. The U.S. dollar still is weak in many countries, so it's an affordable. Or at least more affordable than normal tournament for folks outside the country to attend. You know,
plus they can win seats in their countries.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there still is online qualifying going on elsewhere. So, Jack Effel, the tournament director, he's been the tournament director for I believe 7 years. They said 5 years in a row now. He made a really big deal about the fact that he wanted to be sure people understood how many people win their way in through satellites held at the actual Rio. Because I think that's what people are really wondering is, you know, all these people win their way in on Stars and Tilt. Where are those players going to get in now? He was very clear to be sure that a lot of people make their way into satellites at the Rio. He said 15% of entrants last year won their way in at the Rio, which is probably a bigger number than I would have guessed. And they ran somewhere in the neighborhood of 7,000 satellites of some kind last year.
I mean, 7,000? Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are obviously single tables and things like that. So, I mean, they're not all 7,000 satellites for the main event, but they do run a considerable amount of satellites, right, on site. And whether it's in response to Black Friday or not, they are increasing the number of satellites that they're going to be running this year. One of the things they did mention is they're adding a $75 morning turbo every morning. I believe it pays somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 and some in chips. I don't know the exact breakdown. You'll find out when you get there. But it's an attempt to make it more affordable for people to play satellites and really try to satellite more people into the event so participation doesn't have any kind of drop-off from the online sites. And they're also improving the satellites, too. They're going to allow re-entry this year in the mega satellites. So, you know, if you get knocked out in the allotted time, you can go buy in as a brand-new player. So that certainly should help propel some of the prize pool as well, too. And they also reminded that last year, 1,700 players won their way in through off-site licensed satellites. These are mostly brick-and-mortar rooms that contracted with them to run official World Saturday satellites or charity events or things like that.
Right, we had a bunch here in Florida.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And whether they like to admit it or not, there's probably a lot of unofficial satellites going on, you know, people doing home games are just not using the World Series name and putting up the money and sending people out to Vegas to get in. So, you know, there's still lots of ways to get in the series this year without the online. I think what's missing this year, obviously, is the very cheap ways. You know, the steps starting with the five or the Chris Moneymaker $40 approach is going to be tougher to find this year. But you know, $75 to start working your way up. I mean, it's a little higher step there at the live thing, but you could theoretically go out there a week before the main event and run $75 into a seat, you know, if you really wanted to. So, they were also pretty honest in responding to a question from someone that asked whether these crop of competing tournament series, you know, the Venetian runs their deep stack at the same time, Gold Nugget and Binions have big events, and one of the questioners asked whether they thought that this eats into participation every year. And they said in the past that they didn't have the capacity to offer the players everything they wanted, including a variety of cash games, some of the non-official smaller buy-in tournaments. That created an opening in the market. Some casinos were eager to jump in and took advantage of that. But they said now the Rio does have the capacity to do all these things. They're going to offer more cash game tables this year. They're running at least three small buy-in events every day that, you know, aren't official World Series events, but I think they start at 125 or 135. So cheaper tournaments that people are probably more used to playing at home. So the point they made is you can go to the Rio and stay there the entire time if you want, now that they have the capacity and the variety of stuff to really make it a fully functioning event now.
And that's the other thing too, is they, you know, the circuit's been around for a while, but the circuit also tries to tap into the players who want the World Series experience for the Venetian price or for the Golden Nugget price, and that's how they get it. You know, they go to all these Harris properties around the country and have a $350 buy-in tournament, and that's another way to capture that. So they're doing everything they can to combat it, that's for sure. What are they doing, you know, for, like, the experience of the player? You know, I mean, are they making it better for us to be out there?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I'm always cautious about is people. The World Series is an easy target, I think. It's such a big event, and it's so easy when you have that many people running through for people to complain and those complaints to be multiplied by other people. And so, you know, I've got a lot of my own complaints about it, but I try to keep them in check knowing that it's just such a big thing. It's hard to make everybody happy. But I was really excited to hear some of the things that they're doing this year to improve the player experience. They're adding a smartphone charging station this year. You know, we did our prepping for the World Series show a couple weeks ago. We mentioned all the stuff that you need to bring. One of the things that we forgot to mention that one of our listeners, Thitza, emailed us about to remind him was charging cables for your phones.
Yeah.
Which is great, but when you've got 3,000 people in a tournament on a break, there's not 3,000 outlets where everybody can be charging at the same time. So they're adding a charging station this year that should help with that. And the big thing, I think, is they're offering free internet this year.
Hmm.
Always used to be a problem, I think. I mean, for the media, we always get free internet, but it was confined mostly to the media room.
Yeah.
Which was great until it got the main event and every person in the world that was there and you couldn't get a seat. And we used to, like, sit on the ground out there trying to get a weak signal because, you know, they would charge you $12 or so a day for the normal one.
Right.
It's free now, so I think they really recognize that people really are using smartphones and laptops and things, and it was just kind of a blot on the system to try to get people to pay $12, $15, $20 or whatever on top of a $1,500 tournament entry. They're using the internet. Also, though, it was interesting that they added actual six-handed tables in the live action area, actually tables that accommodate only six people.
Cool.
It's a little smaller, so they could probably put more in. And they're going to do a lot of six-handed type of games. They specifically mentioned Chinese poker, which obviously not six-handed, but...
Triple draw!
Yeah. But, yeah, games like that. And six-handed versions of others, like I believe they mentioned they'll be doing some six-handed PLO, things like that, but on actual six-handed tables. Which
wow,
is
that's pretty cool. Yeah.
They inked a deal with Shuffle Master, so automatic shufflers will be used more frequently this year. Including at all final tables, the Shuffle Masters will be there.
That's cool, because I hate it when I make a World Series final table and I have to wait for the dealer to deal with 30 hands.
Yeah, I mean, the first three or four times I did, I was like, all right, that's cool. But, you know, the last 10, I was like, come on, speed it up.
I want to get more hands per hour, man. I got an internet fix.
And this last thing they didn't mention in the conference call, which I thought was interesting that they didn't, but they sent out a press release a couple days before it, and I thought it was worth mentioning on the show. They are offering one-hour poker seminars from pros. I don't know if it's every morning, but several mornings out there, and it's a good collection of pros, real top-name folks, and they're free. I think it's part of the Poker Gives program. So what they're doing is they're suggesting that folks that attend, you know, leave a donation of at least $20. Or at the very least, pledge to donate 1% of their winnings to Bad Beat on Cancer. So it's free. You know, you obviously can go and take advantage of it if you want. But the idea is to kind of get you to pony up some money for charity, which I think is great.
You know, see, now, for me and you, it would be free because we would donate 1% of our winnings. And, of course,
yes, that's right.
So.
That's the loophole that we would exploit. Oh, yeah, sorry, we're going to pass the question plate. Yeah, I'm donating my winnings. Oh, great! I'm like, no, really, it's not.
I'm not playing, but yeah, I'm donating 1% of whatever I win. All right, well, last week we talked about the increase of TV and web coverage, and even that near live thing with that delay. Did they talk about that at all? Was there any reaction to it?
Yeah, this is definitely the second biggest source of questions after Black Friday. I think a lot of the journalists were concerned about the near live coverage, whether players will be able to benefit from that information. But first, they're very rosy glasses. They wanted to say they were very excited with the expansion of coverage this year, very happy with the long-term contract they have with ESPN, which I think runs through 2017 right now. Reminded us that the final table of every bracelet event will be available in some video format, you know, whether it's televised on one of the ESPN networks or you know, online on ESPN 360. But they mentioned that the near live coverage, and for folks that didn't hear this, what they're going to do for certain tournaments is they're going to offer broadcast of hands 30 minutes after they happen. So It's quote unquote near live. It's not actually when you're watching it, but it is close to they can get to it, and it will involve hole cards, which is probably what people are a little concerned about. They just said this whole idea was a contentious issue, and it's an idea that they've been batting around for a while, and they just weren't comfortable in doing it until they resolved some of the potential problems with it. They think they have, and that's why they're doing it this year. They're also honest in saying that, yeah, there's nothing that can stop players at a near live table from on their breaks going to the bathroom and catching up with their buddies and asking their buddies what the opponents had in hands. There's just no way to avoid that. But what they wanted to mention was that, again, they've been sitting on this for a while trying to work out the problems, and this is one of the things that they tried to work out. So it's the way they're doing it. They're doing 30 minutes at a table, and then they're switching to another table, and to another table, and another table. They're also only showing hands that meet a certain criteria. So when you factor that all together, it's really difficult for anyone to really take advantage of information. I mean, I'm not saying that there's one hand you just really want to know what your opponent had, and if your buddies can tell you what that is, that's going to change your tournament. Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think it's going to be there's nobody out there charting pitches from this coverage and being able to give you that kind of level of detail that's going to help you. And I thought it was humorous, too, that they mentioned that if that's somebody's strategy this year is to have their buddies watch and give them information, they were almost laughing about it and saying that that's probably not a good strategy to have.
But, you know, there is this sort of uneasiness. You know, growing up a sports fan and a sports journalist, I cringe every time they have, you know, Rachel Nichols on the sideline interviewing the coach at halftime, or or they have a camera peeking in at a timeout, and they say, all right, we got to double team Wade, and and it's like, okay, hey, guys, they said they're going to double team Wade. You know, I mean, just to me, it's we shouldn't be privy to that knowledge, and I understand what they're trying to do here, and kudos to them for trying to make this experience even more complete for us, but really, I'm happy with the edited versions, and there's enough poker on TV. Even with them pulling a lot of the poker, there's still enough poker on TV to make me happy. I'm always uneasy when I know insider knowledge that I really shouldn't know, you know?
Well, I not to disagree with you, but I think that information is important for viewers. That's why we want to watch it. What's uneasy is players getting that information in the middle of the contest. In fact, it's funny that you bring up football, because they actually brought that up on the conference call. They kind of likened it to a football game where at halftime, you know, there's nothing to say. The team can't go in the locker room and rewind the entire first half of ABC and watch for content and discussions and things. So I guess it's a necessary evil of advancement. You're right. We can have an honest discussion and debate over whether people really need to have near live coverage, or whether we can just be happy with the edited version later on. But you know, I guess the point is to say, you know, hey, all this stuff is in the player conduct policy, which we'll talk about a little later. So if you're uncomfortable with any of this, your option is not to play.
Yeah.
You know, and that may not be a great choice, but that is your choice. So. Because they did mention, on the conference call, but if you look through the rules of the TV too, that players, you know, if your table's picked to be on TV, you can't opt out.
Right.
You can opt out of just not sitting there and playing.
You stand up and wait.
Yeah, for the time, but you don't have any rights to say, hey, I'm not going to be there. Move me to another table. It's just not the way it's going to work. That's what you're signing when you pay your money to get in. So.
Right.
You know, it's another good reminder, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, that you need to read the player conduct rules before you plunk down the money and make sure you're comfortable with them. And if you're not comfortable with them, certainly you can complain about it, but nothing's going to change this year, and your option is just not to play.
Well, you brought up policies. Were there other policies they talked about?
Yeah, it's a little hodgepodge of stuff here that they mentioned. First, the Hall of Fame process has been changed this year. They're invoking a Chip Reese rule, they're calling it. Honorees have to be at least 40 years old now.
Yeah, that's smart. I've talked about this with Antonio Panzari a lot on his show. Whenever I'm on, we always mention the Hall of Fame and how, you know, Tom McAvoy wasn't in and it's disgrace and all this other stuff. But then how they're always putting like Tom Dwan on the ballot.
Right. Yeah.
And we thought it was hilarious, and that they should have a, you know, back where I'm from, they have a New Haven County Bowling Association Hall of Fame, and the rules where you had to wait till you were 40. And I always had enough points to get in. But I wasn't 40, you know what I mean? And I was like, I want to get in, but I had to wait. And that's just something you have to do. You want to be a Hall of Famer, you got to have patience and wait. And that's a great rule.
Yeah, I mean, it really should be honoring lifetime achievement.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
I don't care how good of a player you are, or whether it's baseball or, you know, foosball or poker. I mean, there should be some longevity to it. So they put that rule in. They also mentioned that open voting will continue again this year like they did last year, but they're adjusting how the final determinations are made. You know, panel of industry experts is going to take care of that. I think that's very similar to what they did last year, so I think there's just some nips and tucks involved in that this year. Another nip and tuck kind of thing is player year scoring changes. They're including World Series Poker Europe events this year, specifically, I think, the French events that are coming up. Wasn't completely clear on how all that was changing, but definitely check that out on their website if it's important to you. If you're one of those players like, you know, you and I are, Chris, that
Globetrotters.
routinely competes for player of the year. You know, they laughably tried to outlaw Twittering a couple years ago. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Before embracing it last year. This year, of course, they reminded everybody it's fully legal. In fact, actually, they understand the power of Twitter this year. I think they really understood that so many players tweet all the time, and that's important for their fans to follow it. And by extension of that, it's important for the brand, you know. Every time somebody tweets something from the World Series, that's another branding for Caesars Entertainment. So, Twitter, you're able to Twitter whenever you want. Cell phones are permitted at the table. You're just not allowed to use them when you're in a hand. So as long as you're not in a hand, you can do what you want. But there was a question from someone that said they recently saw a tournament where a player was being abusive to another player at the table through Twitter. You know, it's funny to hear, but I mean, I guess this kind of stuff happens. So the response to that was, you know, hey, we do have the player conduct policy, so, you know, if something like that happens, we have other remedies. You know, we're not going to foolishly try to outlaw Twitter because of the potential problems with it, but they could monitor it, and they, you know, if you're abusing the player conduct policy, you know, you could get dinged for it. So, again, be sure you read those rules. And then they said obviously they still can't do anything about people who don't meet the age or gender requirements from entering the seniors or women's events. But Jack Eppel was clear that he said he has absolutely no respect for a player who does so. You know,
that's hilarious.
You're a kid that enters the seniors event, or you're a man that enters a ladies' event. And of course, they remind us too that Seth Polansky was on the call, communication director last year. His quote was, "He called these people scumbags." Which is a word that doesn't even make it in some newspapers. That's how upset he was about it. So, you know, they can't do anything about it, but they're really trying to make a strong case. If you are trying to enter these events and you're not entering them in the proper spirit of it...
You'll get the evil eye from Jack Eppel.
Yeah, they don't like you very much.
Ooh, I'm not going to enter this event because Jack Eppel's going to be mad at me. He's not going to have respect for me, so I'm not going to. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I know. We're laughing about it. I mean, I just don't know what else. It's an unfortunate situation. They can't do anything because of laws. You know, you can't prevent people from entering the tournament. So really the best thing you could do is just shame them into not doing it, which obviously evokes some laughter from folks, but... we'll see. You know, I never really heard before. I don't know, maybe you have, of people entering the seniors events that weren't.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. 50, younger,
55 or whatever the cutoff is. That's probably more embarrassing if I was, you know, 25 years old and won the seniors event than it would be if I was a man winning a women's event. I would think. But then again, I'm not going to enter either one.
Yeah,
so.
I've never heard of that. That's pretty weird. So let me ask you, am I going to be stuck in the Penn and Teller skybox eating just beef jerky again this year?
What, you're saying you don't like Jack Links?
Hey, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying a steady diet of it is not good for my blood pressure.
That stuff's the bomb, man. they said Sasquatch will be roaming the halls again at the Rio this year. Jack Links is once again the presenting sponsor. No word on whether they are going to keep forcing us that shredded beef jerky down our throats. Yeah, you never tried that stuff last year, did you?
But... No, I was having a steady diet of Sasquatch's big stick.
Yeah, I mean, the other stuff they do is great. I mean, I didn't really care for the nuggets so much. I thought that was their weakest product until I got the shredded crap.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, Laura and I were traveling last week and went to a Dollar Tree to pick up some, you know, toiletries cheap or something, you know, so the TSA wouldn't nail me.
Yeah.
And right at the checkout aisle, there's Jack Link's shredded beef jerky.
Wow. You know, I don't think I've ever,
the only one that didn't like it.
That's funny, because I don't think I've actually ever seen it anywhere except the World Series and on TV. I mean, I've never seen it in the store, but...
Clearly a product that was invented on Bring Your Intern to Work Day. but the other stuff is really good, and they've obviously been a great sponsor, and they're back this year. Miller Coors has been a sponsor for quite some time. Their Miller Lite brand will be the one that they're focusing on this year. So, you know, as a connoisseur of great value brand beers, like Milwaukee's Best, The Beast, I teared up a little bit hearing that those big cans won't be falling out of the sky this year, that it's going to be Miller Lite instead. But
I
guess it just shows that that's growing up now, that you can't just throw Beast at poker players that were dignified, rarefied people that prefer drinking Miller Lite. I don't know why they couldn't just jump to Miller High Life in between.
Yeah.
They got steps, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. All right, well, Blue Shark Optics, you know, our good friend Gary, has been a sponsor of this show, sponsor of our magazine. He is the official poker optics this year at the World Series.
Wow, that is so
He's
cool.
really excited about that. He's worked really hard to get that designation. And Clips Audio is also a sponsor this year, which is a kind of a nod to the popularity of headphones at the table. And what I thought was interesting, no one really mentioned it on the telecast, but or on the conference call, but these are the two things that are most often talked about being banned.
And now they're official sponsors, right?
So, you know, sunglasses and audio. I'm surprised they don't have a hoodie sponsor. And they could have the Axis of Evil all together there.
That's pretty funny.
Now they're official sponsors. So I don't think you're going to be hearing any more discussion, at least in the World Series, about banning either one of those things.
That's
so
hilarious.
You know, I never really had a problem with them myself at all. So, real kind of a little interesting moment there. And then I love this. This is my favorite part of the call, Chris. Deer Foams is going to give every entrant of the main event and every entrant in select other events a pair of slippers this year.
Slippers? What are we at, the freaking spa?
Well, this is what they were talking about. They said last year at the final table, people were wearing flip-flops. And people just want to be comfortable. And Deer Foam said, hey, you can't be any more comfortable at the table than wearing a pair of our slippers. And we're going to show you by giving them to you.
Oh, my God. I hate – are they open-toed? Because if they are, I'm not even going to show up.
That I don't know.
The last thing I want to see are people's fungus on their feet. You know? I mean, if they're closed, all right, at least you're closing off. But I can't stand open-toe feet at all. I mean, I just can't stand it. Anytime they're any kind of shoes or sandals or anything you can see someone's toenails, I hate that, man. Slippers at the main event.
I'm hoping next year I get a pillow and a blankie.
Yeah, can I get two slices of cucumber for my eyes and get a facial while I'm folding all these rags? What? That's so weird.
Oh, man. But folks, have fun at the World Series this year. It's always a spectacle. And certainly this year with slippers and stuff like that out there, it's even more checking out, so have fun there. And of course, go to the WSOP.com and you can read more about all this stuff.
Backstage, the girls were playing five cards, stood by the stairs.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Lily had two queens, she was hoping for a third to match her pair.
All right, we got another return hand of the week person. This week.
Is that an official title? I'm a return hand of the week person.
Yep. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt.
Oh, God.
But, you know, I got to remind this, too. We've had some comments on the forum from our foreign listeners that say, hey, you know, we can still play online poker over here.
Yep.
Forget about us.
Yep.
And I said, hey, we're not going to forget about you, but don't forget about us. Our bookshelf full of hands of the week is going to be pretty sparse here pretty soon when people can't just copy and paste hand histories. So we are receptive to anyone that sends us hands of the week. So Todd here sent us a live one, which is good. You know, we have to start learning how to play live now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if we get more of these hands, definitely going to put more on the show. All right, so it comes from a $1, $2 crappy no limit
sorry, buddy.
Cash game. Yeah, that's all right.
That's my cold catching up with me an hour and 20 into the show.
Yeah, you get it all hacked up there?
Mm. I'm good to go. I got some Zephyr Hills now.
Excellent. Good. All right, so it's a $1, $2 crappy no-limit hold'em game at a card room in Vegas. Probably the game that most of our listeners are playing these days now.
Yeah, that's true.
He says he plays a tight, aggressive style and has not limped into a single pot in the 3 hours he's been at the table. In orbit earlier, he raised with 7-8 offsuit, fired another bet when he flopped middle pair, and ended up showing the hand down against the villain, who paired his king on the turn, in what he hoped would set up something for later.
Okay.
So this is later now.
Okay.
All right, set it all up with that semi-bluff there. And now, under the gun, plus one calls, and he looks down at Jack of Diamonds, 10 of clubs, in middle position.
I'm folding. I'm folded. I'm not playing the hand, and that's it. And I'm not going to talk about the rest of his hand of the week now. That's
all right, cool. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah, because
we may not have another hand of the week.
I don't want to be results oriented here and have to rehash this hand all the way throughout, because clearly I've stated my case that the proper thing to do here is to fold, and I'm not folding. Nah, he's not folding, so I don't know how to react to this, but I'll try. I would, if I was going to play it, I would probably call long. I don't think I would raise here. I have too many people behind me if I'm in middle position, and I really don't know what the end of the gun plus one would limp with. So, I don't know. I think you're going to argue with that. I think you like to raise with these kind of hands if you're going to come into a hand. And that's fine. I just feel like with Jack 10, I can make a lot of straights, and I'm going to want the pot odds to do it. If I'm just raising, you know, I guess he's thinking that his 7-8 raise earlier would... But that's the whole thing, is Jack 10 is not really a quality hand, especially offsuit in middle position, so it defeats the purpose of that 7-8 offsuit raise. So I would just fold it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm going to surprise you here and not argue with you too much.
Oh, okay, cool.
You know, I love Jack 10 from any position. I like playing it. I don't always like raising with it, but it depends on the position. If I'm under the gun, obviously I'm going to raise with everything.
Right.
First in. If I'm not the first in, it's a hand I'm happy to limp with,
yep,
and try to, you know, stack somebody with a straight. So the kind of the problem that Todd's putting us in here is he says that he doesn't like to limp into pots.
Right. Right?
That's perfectly fine.
Yep.
That's a good strategy. But if that's the strategy, I don't think I'm going to be raising with Jack 10 when I have an under the gun plus one caller already here. It's just a hand I think plays better with more people. And by raising, I'm pushing people out of the pot rather than bringing them into the pot.
And the other thing, too, is he clearly mentions the 7-8 offsuit raise, saying he hopes it pays off later. Well, the whole point of raising with 7-8 and showing it down that you raise with crappy cards is that when he thinks you've got crappy cards, you're going to have the nuts and big cards. And now you're doing with Jack 10, which is not that much of an improvement. So to me, it doesn't make that much of a difference. So I would fold it. Or if I'm going to play it, I would just call.
All right, I would call, too. But obviously, Todd has decided to call, which is fine. And he's going to raise to 7.
Even that I don't like, right? We don't like to raise a 7 there when there's...
Here's the thing. I mean, raise the 7 doesn't... To me, that's not really a raise.
Right.
In a 1-2 no-limit game, you don't get a whole lot of people to fold. I mean, you're going to get the people with really crappy hands to fold. But obviously, the undergun plus one guy isn't going to go away for an extra $5.
Right.
You would think you probably would. But, I mean, remember, it's not a tournament where you could do a 3x raise and people respect it. I mean, a cash game. When you're trying to get people to fold, it's got to be at least a raise to 10, I would think,
yeah,
if not more. I mean, any raise other than that, you're just building a pot, which is fine. That's what I'm talking about, the Jack 10. I mean, if you're going to get more people to come along and then hopefully hit, and if you think it's worth $7, I think it's probably better just to limp with the $2 and save the $5 for later. But I'd be surprised if he gets too many people out. But then, it folds around to this villain who's in the small blind, so he did get everybody in between out.
Hmm.
The small blind does call, the big blind folds, and the original limp. So,
falls. Okay.
Yep. So three of us go into the flop, the pot of $21. Flop is 10-10-5 rainbow.
Okay. Well, we got a fortunate flop for us. That's nice.
See, this is why you always raise a Jack 10, Chris.
That's why you always play it and you always raise with it.
When you know what the flop's going to be, it's very good to be result-oriented and going back and say, yeah, you should have raised. I'm kidding. All right, but so it's 10-10-5. The villain checks under the gun plus one, leads out for 11.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm thinking we're pretty safe. If it's a rainbow board and it's 10-5, no straight is getting there on the next card.
Nope.
and no flush is getting there on the next card. So I feel pretty happy with just a call here and try to let them, because I'm in position, I guess. So now I'll let them see what they're going to do on the next street. And to keep betting, let them just keep hanging themselves.
Yep. All right, well, that's exactly what our hero does. He calls, and the villain check raises to 40. Mm. That gets the end of the gun plus one player out, and we're the last man standing.
That's scary. No one's doing that without a 10 in their hand, right? Unless they have pocket fives. And even then, they would probably just call. Wow, that's scary. That check raise tells me they have a 10, I think.
Well, you know, what's interesting is it's a rainbow board.
Yeah.
You're really not protecting yourself against anything, I don't think. That doesn't mean that you can't play against type here in check raise.
Right.
Because obviously your initial response, and the same with mine, was, oh, wow, okay, you must have a 10. But this is a board that just doesn't make sense to me to check raise. I mean, we didn't raise.
Right.
We have a 10, mostly because we want to walk the dog here a little bit. You know, if the board gets a little scarier on the turn, that's different. But so part of me is dubious about this check raise.
Hmm. We mean like that they have like sevens and think somebody's trying to represent a 10, and since there was just a call, they're thinking.
Yeah,
they really
I mean, at this
10.
Point, is if I put this raise in, most people in a 1-2 no limit are going to immediately think, oh, well, he's got the 10, I need to get out.
Right.
Even if I don't have a 10. I mean, it's almost a move you can make with any two cards here. But certainly, you're right. An underpair, it's more likely to make that kind of move. But I'm a little less inclined to think it's a 10. And if it's a 10, only three of them have us beat. And I don't, you know, ace 10 isn't worried about anything.
Right.
So then you're really narrowing it down to a king 10 or a queen 10, which is entirely possible. But now it's really only two hands.
Right.
And if he's got 10-9 or 10-8 or something other than 10-5, that's great. You know, I want him to keep raising. So I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I'm not worried about this. What I don't know is how to... I don't immediately know how to play it.
Yeah, because if you're confident he doesn't have a 10, and you're confident the other player doesn't have a 10...
Well, the other player's out now. So.
The other player went out after that. Okay, so now, if you're confident he doesn't have a 10, then you want to just call. That's the thing, is now you have to start thinking, does he have a 10? And is it 9-10? Is it 9-10 as ranged? Then you want to just keep calling along, or... If he has a 10, you know you're beating him, then you want to shove because he's not going to fold. And then you've got him beat. So it's hard to really know here. I think maybe a call is in order.
Well, the other thing, too, I'm wondering, too, is what my call tells him about my hand.
Right. It polarizes it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, does it tell him, oh, man, he must have a 10, just a weak 10? Or does he put us on a small pair, which is what we're kind of putting him on? There's not a lot of hands that are going to make that call, right?
Right. I'm just saying that, and I agree. And
which
I think
is fine.
That,
you know, at this point, I'm fine turning my hand up, you know, for the most part.
But if he has, if I have ace 10, if I'm Todd and I have ace 10 and I call, and what the other player is saying, okay, he just called, he must have a 10, but if I just had 9-10, I might still just call. So it really doesn't tell him what 10 I have either. It does tell him I have a 10, but it doesn't tell him what 10 I have. So if
but if he doesn't have a 10, he just needs to know that you have a 10.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. So no matter what I do, I'm telling him I have a 10 here, unless I fold. Yeah. So
I mean, the question to me is, if you raise here and he's just making the move, you'll lose him.
Right.
So if you call, maybe, you know, more likely he's going to check if he doesn't have anything, but he might take another stab at it. You can get more money out of him. Obviously, we're not folding, I don't think, unless you really have a read on him that he's got a better 10 than you. So I'm not seeing much of a compelling case to do anything but call here.
Right.
And the next card and the action does. And that's the beauty of being in position, too.
Well, the other thing, too, is if you re-raise this guy and he shoves, you're not going to fold three 10s and a jack, I don't think.
Yeah, and at that problem, then...
And you know you're screwed, too.
You're pretty much screwed, right. And you got the catch, so... the other thing, too, is we don't know our stack sizes here, too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'm sitting on $100 here, in which case, you know, if I lose it, great. Or if I'm sitting on $500, and he's sitting on $500.
Right.
A little more different, but... all right, well, our hero decides to call.
Yeah.
Pot's at 107 now after they took the Rake and Jackpot out of it. Now, he says the villain's a decent player. He says much better than most of the tourists who limp into way too many pots and only raise pre-flop with strong hands and generally calling stations. So he's giving him some respect here. Says he's mixed it up a little bit, but he hasn't been overly aggressive to this point either. So he's pretty sure he's got top set as well, too. We'll call top trips.
Yeah.
And it's very reasonable to think that he has another 10. I don't really understand why he would raise with it there. I think he might just call like we did. I mean, look at it. If we have a 10 there, too, I mean, we lost a guy by raising.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want that other guy in?
Yeah.
On a board, a rainbow board with no straight possibilities, I'd want to keep everybody in.
Yeah.
Particularly if he's going to take another stab, you know?
Yeah, and you're in position, too.
So, I don't know. The 10 seems less likely to me. Okay. The more I think about it. But, all right, the turn is a blank. Of course, we don't know what a blank really means, but I'm assuming it doesn't help a straight or a...
like a three or something.
Flush, probably, yeah. Right. Yeah, and certainly not over card. And the opponent pushes all in for 145.
Okay, so that means we know the guy started with roughly 200. A little less than 200.
Yeah, 85 at 190, 192. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, that's a normal bet there. I mean, if you're gonna bet, if there's 100 in the pot and you're gonna bet half pot, $50, that's a 30-year stack. You know, you're gonna bet 2/3 of the pot. That's $70 or whatever. So that's half your stack. So you might as well shove. So that's a standard push there. It doesn't necessarily mean he has a 10, but it's a standard push there. He still could have something like 9-9 here or whatever. This is a tough hand. I mean, I felt early on that the check raise felt like it was a 10 just because he would need to be pretty comfortable to do that. Because with one player betting and another player calling, you have a feeling someone has a 10 there. So the check raise like that, that's how I felt initially. And then you talked about a different way of playing the hand. So I don't know. To shove now, he has to shove, I think, because what else is he going to do? I mean, he could value bet, I guess, if he has the nuts here. You know, like ace 10 or 10-5 or something. But
all right, let me ask you this again, too. I mean, if he's got a 10 and it really was a blank, is he hoping to get – and I'll let everybody know, too, that we have 150 in front of us, so this would be essentially calling off our stack here. Is that really the way to get paid off with this hand?
Well, it is if you have ace 10 and you're positive the other guy has a 10, I think. I mean, that's the thing. Is this guy
well,
does have ace 10.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm trying to put him on ace 10 or king 10 here, thinking that the only hand that beats him if he has king 10 is 10 rag, 10 5, or which is unlikely because of the raising pre-flop.
but even that, though, I mean, don't you think you're going to get that money, that money is going to get in the pot on the river anyhow? I'm not worried about losing a guy if he has a 10 here.
Right.
I mean, I guess the only fear is that he's going to pair his other card on the river, but if we get them all in anyhow, that doesn't matter. So at this point, if I'm trying to get another 10 money in, it's going to happen one way or the other.
Yeah.
I think betting, pushing it all in now, you're running the risk of a solid player laying down a weaker 10. Whereas if you would put in bet of 40 or 50 here.
Okay, well, here's the other thing. Now, in my mind, if that is the way people are thinking, and that's the way you're thinking, then you've fallen into his trap when he has a 10 or an ace 10. And you're thinking, oh, you know what? If he had a 10, he would bet less here. And so I'm going to – and this guy's convinced you have a 10 and he shoves, he knows he's going to get all your money. But you know what I mean? And you've fallen into his trap because he knows he has the nuts. Whereas if he bet 60 or 30, you might call, and then he bets 50 and you might call, and he's only getting 80 out of you instead of 140 or 150. So maybe he's doing that overbet trap thing here with a better 10 than you. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just trying
to... Oh, absolutely. I'm willing to acknowledge that he could do that. Yeah. What I'm saying, taking us out of the hand and floating above it in other situations, I mean, if I'm in his situation and I have a 10 and I think my opponent has a 10, this move is really only designed to get a player that thinks you're overbetting the pot for some reason to call. It's wrought with more risk, I think.
Well, I think that if he said that player was a decent player, and if he thinks you're a decent player, then he might think you'll think that you know, my shove means I'm bluffing, or my shove means that, you know, I couldn't possibly have a 10 because if I had a 10, I'd want to milk you for all you have, or a better 10. So he may be putting you on that level of thinking that you're a meta, you know, player or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But no, I know conventional thinking would say.
But even that, but I guess that's my point. Even if he does, do you not think he's going to get that money if he bets 70 now? Or 50, that he's not going to be able to get the other whatever you have in your stack out of you in the river.
Well, again, I don't know.
It seems like it's 40. a high risk move, regardless. In this situation, because of with the board, the texture of the board.
Right. I don't know. I mean, if he bet 40 on the last tree, he might bet 40 now. And if he does that and he wants to continue that line of thinking, he bets 40 later. And
okay, well, but
calls,
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying, though, is if I'm the villain and I want to get the stack, I'm going to size my bet to get it all in. So I'm probably not going to bet 30 here and then 40 on the next hunt. I'm going to bet maybe 70 here and my other 75 on the next. That's what's going through my mind. It's trying how to get that other person's stack. So
right.
I'm not suggesting that he needs to do a more of a proper bet sizing here. I'm saying that, you know, if I have ace 10 here, I'm not worried of really about anything at this point.
Right.
And if I could put 70 in now and get 70 now and 75 on the next street and be virtually guaranteed of getting this whole stack, I would rather do that than push all 145 in now and risk a good player saying, you know what, he might have ace 10, I'm going to lay down my 10.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what this guy is thinking by shoving. Again, the only logical line of thinking that I can come up with is that, one, he's, you know, thinking you're thinking that, you know, he can't have a 10 by making that bet, and that he's positive you have a 10, or that he's just not as advanced as our hero thought he was, and he's just nervous for some reason. And I don't know what he'd be nervous about other than, like, Jack's hitting a two-outer on him, you know?
Yeah, he could be nervous if he had pocket fives here, too.
Right, but why would he shove a pocket five? He's still losing. So, you know what I mean? If pocket fives aren't going to fold... So
well, I mean, he's not
fives.
Losing...
He's losing the pocket fives. He only has three of a kind. Pocket fives has a full house.
No, but if he had pocket fives.
Oh, if he had. Oh, yeah. Pocket fives could be nervous, I guess. Yeah. Protecting
yeah. Because you're vulnerable to a person with a 10 because, you know, if he pairs his card, then he beats you. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a hand that I think is very realistic here.
That could be a hand, right? If he had 5-5 and he's positive you have a 10, but he wants to make it expensive for you to. You know, he knows you can't fold, but he wants to make sure that you're going to pay the full amount to try to pair your other card or pair the board again. So, yeah. It could be 5-5. It could be 5-5.
To be honest, that gives credence to his check raise on the flop that I didn't like, you know, because you want to push off anybody with a 10 and just be happy to take down it and not let somebody suck out on you on a hand that's going to be hard for you to lay down.
Yeah.
I hate to put somebody on one hand, but that's the one that makes the most sense here.
Yeah, it could be 5-5 or ace 10.
All right, so all that considered, we're facing a call for all of our stack minus
$5.
Value meal.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm not folding. I mean, especially since I only started with $200 in this hand, I've lost $200 on one hand countless times, so I'm not letting this hand go. I don't think I can fold it here. Three tens with a jack. And I still have outs if he has a better 10 than me. I still have a jack. I still have a 5, you know, to split. I still have, you know what I mean? So I can't fold.
To me, that's the real linchpin here is that whatever he has, I have outs to beat him.
Right.
At this point. I mean, if you just get 5-5, I can still pair my jack. Same with, you know, any of the higher 10s. And so I still have outs to catch up, and I very well could be ahead here.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't let it go.
And you're right. You know, maybe a better person can lay this down. I don't think I'm that better person.
No.
I'm not going to be... I don't have a reputation for being fairly passive at the table, but I'm not going to... let myself be pushed around on this hand. I don't think.
There's no way. I mean, and there's no way to put him on. You know, you can't precisely put him on ace 10 or king 10 or queen 10. You can't do it. It could be 5-5. It could be anything. It could be bluffing still. We still don't even know. He could have an overpair that he was being tricky with. You just don't know. So, I mean, I can't give up three tens when there's only one other 10 in the entire deck and it has to be in his hand with a better kicker for me to lose. And even pocket fives, there might have been an argument for raising preflop with the fives that. Not that he would have, but you never know.
Yeah.
But the check raise does sort of enforce that it could be 5-5. But I can't fold.
All right, so we're both calling. our hero is going to the top process. He says he's certain now that he's got top trips. Questions whether he's outkicked. He says four hands are beating him, ace 10, king 10, queen 10, and 5-5, which he is worried about now given the shove. He says, however, though it's a small blind, he could also have called my preflop raise with suited connectors like jack 10, 10-9, 10-8, possibly even 10-7 or 10-6. He says Sklansky would even warn against ruling out a bluff, even though I don't think he's bluffing.
Hey, see that? I said something like that too, so I'm on the same level as Sklansky.
So he says he's losing the forehands, beating four, counting a bluff, chopping with one, and he has 150 in front of him. He says he's a pretty tight player, and much like Scott, I'm usually the first one to fold to lots of action whenever I think I might be beat. Aw, Todd, I love you. But he said, there's also a lot of money in the pot, a chance I can double up, and I'm trying to get to the point where I'm not such a timid nit. I'm right there with you, buddy.
Yeah.
So I call. He says, in part because he tells me he won't show me his hand if I fold. Does that ever work, though?
I don't know if that ever works with me, but yeah, that's pretty funny.
Will you show? Yeah, I'll show. Okay, I'll fold. He says, even if he's beat, he has six outs to a chop. Versus Jack. He says, the villain does one of those moves where he only shows me a 10, and a worried look flashes across his face when I show him mine.
Oh, no.
This means I put him on a hand, but he didn't put me on mine. Which turns to be out my only consolation, right?
I get a consolation.
Consolation when he shows me his queen kicker.
Oh.
Slow rolled.
Oh.
Which holds up to win the pot.
Queen 10. Yeah. Okay, so let's get back to the $145 shove of Queen 10.
Well, yeah, it gets back to what you say. I mean, it's an overshove designed to get us to call.
Yeah.
I say, if you had Queen 10 there, and I'm not getting Gundam all worked up by going back and looking, playing this hand now knowing the cards, but right. We're not going anywhere in this pot. And, I mean, if the bet sizing is different by pushing it that much, it really makes good players stop and think whether you got them out kicked.
Right.
It seems to me like a high risk move when you've got lower risk moves that are just as effective in your arsenal.
Okay. Well, we'll just to make everybody happy for future reference with this player. If our hero is playing with this player again, now he knows. Because we know the Queen 10. We know that this guy has it in his arsenal to overbet when he has what essentially here was the nuts. Because right. Hoping that you'll call, thinking he's either bluffing or has a worse hand than you. So we know that it's in his arsenal, and that's what happened. That's why we're revealing that he has the Queen 10 and saying that at that moment when he shoved then, that's why he shoved. Because he felt like you had a 10 that might be worse than yours, or you might have something like 9-9 and he's going to get paid off with a bluff as a bluffer or whatever. So
right.
You know, whatever. So that's why we always explore the going back and saying, you know, because we want to see what the story he was telling us, and that's the story he's trying to sell, is that he was, you know, overbetting, and we ended up calling, and so that's what he did with his nuts. So, well, that sucks. Queen 10 too. It's to be pipped. I mean, ace 10 you can live with, but to be pipped with queen 10, that sucks.
Yeah, that's rough, too. Now, our hero did go through some thinking there, and he said his spidey senses were tingling. His gut told him he was outkicked. Percentages of his likely holding said the same thing. In hindsight, he thinks it was a bad call.
Well, I don't think it's a bad call. He could have easily had 10-9 there. Very easily had 10-9. Jack-10. He could have very easily had Jack-10. That's the type of hand that Jack-10 gets involved with and a situation where they would call the small raise. And that's the other thing too, is maybe if you raised more, maybe the queen 10 gets out, you know, and obviously, you know, you don't want to be results oriented that way, but I'm just saying that there's a lot of things that led up to you not knowing what he had, but very easily could have had a hand that you beat. And so I don't fault the call.
Well, you make a good point about a jack 10. I mean, that's the most frustrating situation, I think, is when you make a tough decision, you get it in, and your opponent turns over the same hand you have.
Yeah.
We had that in the home game this week. You know, Gambit and I were in a double flop hand, and he really had me flummoxed. I had a real strong hand, and he kept putting the screws to me.
Yep. It was ace-jack, right? Was that the ace-jack?
Yeah, the ace-jack hand, and yeah. I just couldn't figure out whether he actually had a hand that had me beat, so I slowed down and played it passively, and then we turned it over, and we both had the same hand. And for some reason, I just never put him on the same hand because that's what I had.
Yeah.
And it's tough. You know, you keep thinking of you know, better or worse. And, you know, it really came to the later part of this hand of the week conversation before we even mentioned that he might, our opponent might have Jack 10. So to me, that's something I think it's important to think about at times, that there are times that you get the same hand.
You know, you wouldn't think a hand where one person was pipped by the other one would be such an interesting hand of the week, but this really was very interesting from beginning to end.
Yeah, great hand, Todd. We appreciate you sending it in. And he has one last question for you, Chris. He wants to know whether he should have check-raised all in on the flop.
I don't think that he's going anywhere with it. But, again, we don't want to use the queen 10 now that we know it as the answer. Playing that hand check-raising is way too much on the flop. That's way too much. That's way too big of a bet in that situation. And, again, when we were not knowing the guy's hand and we're going through, you were right when you said, well, it's 10-5, so there's no straight in a turn and there's no flush on the turn. Why should we re-raise this guy when we want to string him along? We are confident that we have the best hand at that point, and we want to string him along because why would he have check-raised with a 10 when he has us dead to rights? So we couldn't put him on a 10 in the beginning, or you couldn't. I said he had it. I felt like he was comfortable putting him on a 10 there. But all in, I don't think I would have made it all in. The check raise was to 40, so I would have made it. Maybe if I was going to raise again, which, again, you and I agreed, we shouldn't raise there because we felt like we had him dead to rights. So, no, I wouldn't have check raised, and especially not another, at that point, would have been another 150, right, I guess? So that's a lot, I think. I mean, yeah, you could raise again to 150 because three times his 40 would be 120, so you might as well shove. But I wouldn't have check raised there. And either way, you're not getting what turns out to be, you're not getting anybody to fold who has a 10 anyway.
Yeah.
So, and if they have a worse hand, they're not calling. So, I agree with just calling the 40. I wouldn't have check raised, however you say it, check re-raised.
And he says to add insult to injury, he picked up his first pair of pocket aces in the very next hand when he had $5, Chris.
$5.
Limped in, got a few callers, spikes an ace on the flop, buddy.
Oh my God.
Pushes his last $3 in, loses to a heart flush.
Oh my God.
Well, that's poker.
Oh my God.
All right, Todd, appreciate you sending in the hand. Obviously, you know you're a swag winner, so we can't help you here. But everybody else, send your hand of the week to podcast at anyupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something great like a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net.
Scott, I want to thank you for listening to the World Series of Poker Conference while I was very busy putting the magazine together. And I want to thank the World Series for having the conference so that we had a show this week.
My pleasure. Always looking forward to it. And remind folks, we'll see you at the series ourselves last week of June, first week of July. So,
absolutely. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.